The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 360, recorded on... Oh, see, you made me f*** up.
I made you f*** who?
Okay. The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 360, recorded on September 3rd, 2014.
Hello, and welcome to the 360th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 193rd episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Paul S. Novak.
I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and includes gaming flashbacks.
You see? Skype can't decide to tell you to shut up.
It has to listen to you. I like it when Skype is my bitch.
Yeah. Anyways, what have you been playing, Paul?
I feel like I've been playing something really interesting.
You know what? Before we get into that, there was no podcast last week because it was Labor Day, and also Paul had to do 48 hours of something.
Paul was laboring.
What were you doing? That was a 48-hour test.
I was doing a 48-hour design test for a gig that I'm up for.
Did you have to do like consecutively 48 hours?
Yes, they give you an assignment. You have 48 hours to turn it around.
Okay. I thought they had...
So the 2.5 hours... So like the 2 hours that sometimes it takes to record a podcast just was not in the schedule that week.
No, but I'm just thinking, as for some reason I had this image of you being chained to a desk and being forced to write pictures while they watched you for 48 hours.
Well, I mean, they don't usually stand over you, but that's kind of what it is. The joys of getting a job as a game designer, my friends.
Yeah.
Sometimes people are like, okay, you got chops? Go for it. Let's see what you can do. You got 48 hours.
Was this tackle a big this company problem. Or an indie?
It's like, okay. It's a nice-sized company.
Okay. So, anyway, now, you've been playing a lot of mobile games. Maybe that's what you've been playing?
I have been playing a lot of mobile games. Perhaps... You know, I think most interestingly, I've been playing My Little Pony on iOS lately.
Is that inspired by your trip to that convention? You were going to BronyCon, all of a sudden you said, you know what? I want more of My Little Pony. How can I get more
of it? I started researching that back in the day when I was working for Disney.
But Disney has nothing to do with My Little Pony, do they?
It's a market It's a product catering to a similar market segment as Disney was trying to cater to.
Okay.
So yeah, I had started researching it a while back, and I was just like, you know what? I like ponies. Let me go play that pony game again. And so I did, and they added a whole bunch of new features. And I was like, oh, this is fun now.
Do you play the one with a hat? The cowboy hat?
You kind of play as God, overseeing all of the little ponies.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So you kind of play with the ponies. Things like fulfill the constellation and bounce the ball.
Okay.
And catch the apples.
Because friendship is magic.
Friendship is magic, goddammit. I'm just saying, if anybody has shit to say about the magic that is friendship, I'm going to have a word with them.
So, okay.
Friendship is magic.
But you're not playing that that food truck thing, are you?
I have not been playing that as much.
Okay, because you said that you got additional, or was it just another platform that it was on?
No, it was on another. It's the same game on another platform, right. But it's synced. But I just haven't been, like, I know we got a whole bunch of new levels, but I haven't been around really much to play them. I really hope I haven't fallen out of favor with that game, because I spent like over $100 on it at one point.
Well, wouldn't you have fallen out of favor with it, not it falling out of favor with you?
I hope I haven't fallen out of favor with it. Is that what I said? I hope... Oh.
Yeah, it makes it sound like the game is rejecting you.
Oh, I don't know. I hope I haven't gotten over it. I mean, it was fun, but it's like I got busy and I started doing other things. Yeah. And now I don't really remember what all the recipes are.
Okay.
It's kind of like once you a system has to be designed in such a way so that if you're away from it for a month because things come up, like, you know, a birthday or the birth of twins or whatever, you should be able to like
pick up where you left off without having to re-memorize a whole bunch of stuff.
You know,
that's kind of like, I guess, what I was feeling. I just haven't really had the time. Oh, plus I've taken up swimming.
You know, that reminds me, I have two games, Game of Thrones and Band Stars. Both have been saying, please come back and play us on my iPad. You know, they say, oh, if you come back, we'll give you some new, what's it called? Cans of soda. Cans of soda refresh the rocker so that, you know, it restores their stats so they can use them. So it's sort of like, please come back. Because both those games work on microtransactions, which I haven't used, but, you know, it's like, please come back. It's there's such puppy dog eyes with the update. Something's popping up, say, hey, guess what? If you come back, we'll give you some more cans that you can use.
See, now you said the titles of those games, and really, in my head, it got translated into Game of Thrones, Game of Thrones.
I might play Game of Thrones soon. I mean, have you played the Game of Thrones? It's both on Facebook as well as iPad.
No, I haven't been into that IP. I haven't seen it on Netflix. And
well, I don't either, but you know what happens is that you play as a lord, right? And all of a sudden these decisions pop up, and you have to choose between new ways and old ways, or family or the realm or whatever, you know. So while you're playing, you're creating your personality of your lord, right?
Uh-huh.
So like if he's always into family, you know, you get family points and you can spend them on stuff that's related to the family, right?
Like children? God, what a horrible warlord.
No. It's more like it's more devotion to, you know, family loyalty rather than to the realm. You know, you're more concerned about your
so you run around siring bastards? What a horrible game.
Anyway, and Band Stars is just you making rock music bands, you know, sort of like Theme Hospital, except with rock and roll instead of.
I know what I've been playing that I forgot to mention. I have been replaying Earthbound for the Super Nintendo.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if I mentioned that in our last podcast. But
Mother? Is that the Mother 3, but it just had its name changed in the United States?
Yeah, I never know what it was called overseas.
It was called Mother, and I think Earthbound was Mother 3.
Whatever. It was a fun game. I know it as Earthbound from the N64, for the Super NES. I've played this game a lot because it was one of the games that, like, I bought back in the day, and, like, it came with its own strategy guide.
Hotline.
Right, but this was before every game had its own strategy guide. So it was like, oh, okay, so if I get stuck or if it sucks, at least I can, you know, go, like, I can look through the book. All right, so I left the book at my mother's house when I moved.
Okay.
From New York to California. So now it's like trying to get through this game that I've beaten, like, at least 20 times without the freaking strategy guide.
Isn't it online?
Well, yes, but I, over the course of like 15 years, like I made notes in the strategy guides and things that I cared about.
Wow.
You know, like what level to be before trying to take on a certain boss just to make my life easier.
Hmm.
Like, you know, my self-imposed grind points.
Right.
And things like, kill these guys. They're worth a lot of experience points.
You know, I have something sad is that I left my my civilization colonization manual in a place where it got really, really wet. And even though I tried to dry it, it was like completely destroyed and I had to throw it out. And looking all over eBay, no one's selling that manual. And even though the manual isn't that necessary to play the game, I still feel sad because I loved reading those manuals because that was a thick manual, you know. And it's, you know, I just want something to read, damn it, about the game that I'm playing.
Speaking of eBay, they used to have this campaign a while back that it said, whatever it is, you can find it on eBay. That was such crap because I could never find a replacement for my Rent scarf on eBay. Now, it's not the one from the movie. It's the one that they used to sell in the theater.
What scarf?
Rent scarf.
Oh, Rent scarf. I saw that you said Red scarf.
No, well, it was black and red, and it was from the show Rent, and it said 525600 on the back, and it was pinstriped on the other side.
I
used to wear that thing obsessively.
Isn't that the redhead was wearing?
No, absolutely not, because that is widely available at eBay, but it's like the movie replica scarf, and it's like, are you kidding me? No, I don't want his scarf. I want the scarf that I bought as a souvenir. Okay. The one that was actually, like, cool. Yeah. So I can't find the good one. It says 525-600 on one side.
How do we get
red
here?
Letters on black. I don't know, because I hate eBay. Because whatever it is, you can't find it on eBay. You just can't.
Okay. Anyway, getting back to the original topic, what we've been playing. I've actually been playing two things that I didn't have that are kind of old, but I just bought them new. I just got them.
Oh, new to you?
What? Okay.
Oh, you mean new to you?
Yeah. Well, not new to me. It's just that I never played them when they came out, and it's like I'm getting around to them. I said, oh, you know what? Maybe I'll.
Well, no, that means new to you if you haven't played it before. It's like
well, I know
if you haven't
seen
them.
Though. It's not a re-release.
Well, yeah,
it's not re-released.
But if you haven't played it before, then
okay,
it's
well,
new to you.
Well, the first time playing. Okay, one is Crimson Dragon, which was the an Xbox One game that was launched, you know, and it got mediocre reviews. So they were giving it away for free on Xbox Gold, and I picked it up, and you know, it's actually pretty good, and I don't understand why it got mediocre reviews, you know. It wasn't because it got mediocre reviews that I didn't buy it. It's just it's a rail shooter. You know, it's a dragon rail shooter. You know, basically it's Panzer Dragoon Orta. It's a spiritual sequel to one of those games. You know, when you're riding a dragon and you're flying around and you're shooting things with your dragon breath. So it you know in this game you know it's surprisingly deep. You know, you can upgrade stuff, and it looks like there's a lot of game there, which is a problem when you have a rail shooter. One of the things that a lot of rail shooters have in common is that they're really, really short. You know, it's like an 8-hour game. Okay, you did all the rail shooting. That's it. Game over. At least this one looks like it's going to have more to it, you know.
Uh-huh.
Do you ever play rail shooters?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, how about light gun games? Those are usually rail shooters.
Light gun games?
Light gun, yes. You know, like
Duck Hunt?
Yes, except you're moving around. Like House of the Dead.
Oh, you mean like Hogan's Alley?
Or House of the Dead, you know, that sort of thing.
Eh, okay. No.
The other game it's not really a game that I play. It's an expansion. I got the XCOM Enemy Within expansion to XCOM. And it's pretty good. I haven't finished it. There's a lot of neat stuff that was added in. Like, one thing you can... one thing has one of your soldiers voluntarily have their arms and legs cut off so they can be put in a mech, so they have mechanical arms and legs. It's really weird stuff. So anyway, that's what I've been playing. And
well, good.
Yeah. So anyways,
well, then we've answered that question.
Yeah. So anyway, before we get into the gaming flashback, I'm sad to report that GameStooge.com is being shut down by Too Old to Play because they want the space that it takes up. So I've been furiously copying key articles, which were really famous, and putting them on the Podbean site. Like, one of them was the video in which a Halo 3 player accidentally killed himself with a traffic cone. And that was probably the most... It got so famous that Bungie later put in a traffic cone death in their stats. So it actually had... You know, we actually, you know, moved the needle with that one. Also, Jonathan Howard did an article on Lord British getting killed in Ultima Online.
And, I worked with Lord British.
Hmm?
I worked with Lord British.
Yeah, I met Richard Garriott at E3 this year. And it's the only time I ever in my life... felt a little starstruck. You were there, actually. You were there?
Yes, I was there.
Yeah, so anyway, so it was the, you know, it was the article. It was actually linked in crack.com and other sites. So I had to make this so that they wouldn't have a broken link. I copied the article, put it in Podbean, and let them know, hey, listen, you know, the site is being shut down. So if you don't want a broken link and you still want people to read the article, it's going to be over here now. So... There's other stuff like the 50 best games of the decade of the aughties, you know, the aughts, or however you want to say it, you know, 2000 to 2009, and other stuff that I'm copying over. And it's really sad because the site launched in 2007. So even though the site hasn't had much, I mean, putting this podcast on the site has been all that's been doing for the past like year or maybe a couple of months because I just haven't had the time to do articles. So, you know, there's like 14,000 articles on that site. And I think I'm responsible for like 11,000 of them.
What site is this?
Game Stooge.
Oh.
Remember, at the end of every episode, I say, for gaming news, check out GameStooge.com. Well, I'm not going to be able to do that much anymore.
Oh, well, then at least you'll have more free time.
Yeah, but, you know, there's all that work that I did. Well, no, it isn't. I've had no free time for it anyway. I've just been posting this podcast on it. So, I mean, this podcast gets posted on gamingpodcast.net and GameStooge and also GameStooge.podbean, but only because that's the site. That's the.
So wait, why is GameStooge.com going away?
Because the people at Too Old to Play need the disk space. Because it's an offshoot of TooOldToPlay.com, and they need the disk space, and it's taking up too much disk space. So they're going to cancel it and use the space for Too Old to Play.
Wait, why don't you just give them money? Like, that would be so much easier than the process of.
Well, I was talking to them. They're going to send me the SQL file. You know, so if ever I want to launch the site again, you know, and I can't afford to keep up a site, just, you know. I mean, doing Podbean is
it's like $10 a year for a domain.
I guess. You know what? I'm just going to, you know, for now, they're just going to give me the SQL, and when I'm ready to port it over, I'll port it over. So.
Okay.
But
I'm just saying,
it's the end of an era.
It's cheap.
It's the end of a big era. It's a 7-year era. You know, it's where I got my start. It's actually where Mitchell Dyer of IGN got his start. You know, so, and Devin Grimes, you know, and Jonathan Howard, sort of. You know, oh, there's some of his articles I got to post over. Like he did a huge article on why Warcraft became so. In that Blizzard was going to get the license for Warhammer, but they didn't get the license, so they just kept on going on with it and just called it Warcraft and changed the things a little bit. So basically, it's it's basically Warhammer with some minor differences, you know, the serial numbers filed off. And from that, you know, we actually have, and this is a good segue, the gaming flashback. This is a major game, to say the least. And again, time has passed. This game was launched in 2004, so technically, it's a game. So do you want to do this or shall I?
You shall.
Okay. This week's gaming flashback is World of Warcraft. World of Warcraft, or WoW, is a massively multiplayer online role-playing game, an MMORPG, created in 2004 by Blizzard Entertainment. It's the first release game set in the fantasy Warcraft universe, which was first introduced by Warcraft Orcs and Humans in 1994. Now, Paul, you're a fan of the RTS, right? The Warcraft?
I am a fan of the RTS. I have all three of them sitting right here in my hot little hand.
You know what? I haven't played Warcraft. Well, let me go on for a little bit. World of Warcraft.
Read through the copy. Yeah. They enjoy that.
World of Warcraft takes place in the Warcraft world of Azeroth, approximately 4 years after the events at the conclusion of Blizzard's previous Warcraft release, Warcraft III, The Frozen Throne. Blizzard Entertainment announced World of Warcraft on September 2nd in 2001, and the game was released on November 23rd, 2004, on the 10th anniversary of the Warcraft franchise. World of Warcraft takes place in a 3D representation of the Warcraft universe that players could interact with through their characters. The game world initially consisted of two continents in Azeroth, Kalimdor, and the Eastern Kingdoms. Three separate expansions later added to the game's playable area of the Realm of Outland, and the continents of Northrend and Pandaria. As the player explores new locations, different routes and means of transportation become available. Players can access the Flight Masters in newly discovered locations to fly to previously discovered locations in other parts of the world. The player can also use boats, zeppelins, or portals to move from one continent to another. Although the game world remains relatively similar from day to day, seasonal events are reflecting their real-world events such as Halloween, Christmas, Children's Week, Easter, and Midsummer have been represented in the game world. Game locations also have variable weather, including, among other things, rain, snow, and dust storms. The number of facilities are available for characters while in the towns and cities. In each major city, characters can access a bank to deposit items, such as treasure or crafted items. Each character has access to a personal bank storage with the option to purchase additional storage space using in-game gold. Additionally, guild banks are available for use by members of the guild, with restrictions being set by the guild leader. Auction houses are also available for players to buy and sell items to others in a similar way. In a similar way to online auction sites such as eBay. See, everything is just linking together in this episode. See? You were complaining about eBay, and this is eBay.
eBay's evil.
Players can use mailboxes, which are found in almost every town. Mailboxes are used to collect items won at auction and to send messages, items, and in-game money to other characters. Some of the challenges in World of Warcraft require players to group together to complete them. These usually take the place in dungeons, also known as instances, that a group of characters can enter together. The term instance comes from each group or party having a separate copy or instance of the dungeon, complete with their own enemies to defeat and their own treasure or rewards. This allows people to explore areas or complete quests without others interfering. In other words, getting away from the Wikipedia talk, you and your group will go into a cave, and you don't have to worry about other people stealing your kills because that cave has been copied only for you. The thing about it is, if you get killed in that instant, you have to go to the outside of the instant, and God forbid your party is all the way near the entrance because you have to run through the entire way. And while you're running, you might actually have the enemies respawning, saying, "Well, guess what, guys? I can't do this, you know, because there's no way I can get back to you." Dungeons spread over the game world and designed for characters of varied progression. A typical dungeon will allow up to 5 characters to enter as a group. Some dungeons require more players together to group together to form a raid of up to 40 players to face some of the most difficult challenges. As well as dungeon-based raid challenges, several creatures exist in a normal game environment that are designed for raids to attack. World of Warcraft was first announced in Blizzard, as we said, in September 2001, and it was released in 2004, which included 4 to 5 years of game testing and development. The 3D graphics in the World of Warcraft used elements from the proprietary graphics engine originally used in Warcraft 3. The game was designed to be an open environment where players were allowed to do what they please. Quests are optional, and they were designed to help guide players, allowing character development and to spread characters across different zones, try to avoid what developers call player collision. Game interface allows players to customize appearance and controls, which we call macros, and install add-ons and other modifications. So getting back to now, I should have realized this, but I didn't play Warcraft 3 as much as you did. But you know, now that I think of it, yeah, when you first played World of Warcraft, it was like entering into Warcraft 3. You know, the graphics are the same, and you know, Warcraft 3 was notable for all of its 3D graphics. You know, unlike Warcraft 1 and 2, which were basically sprites. You know, Warcraft 3's big thing was it was 3D. It was completely 3D.
I have a secret confession as a game designer.
Uh oh.
And that is that I've never actually played World of Warcraft.
Okay. Well, the thing about World of Warcraft was that it was a typical, you know, it was a typical MMO. I mean, things in it were basically everything that you saw in other MMOs, but it was polished so well. And one of the things was death, you know, in which other games had severe penalties. In this one, you either you could go back to a graveyard and have to run all the way back, or you had someone resurrect you, you know, and the penalties were not as much. And the other thing is that if you quit the game and, you know, and you came back like after a day, you'd get something called rest bonus, in which you get extra XP because you left the game, which is sort of nice. It's sort of like an incentive to say, stop playing. You have a life. Play something. Do something else. You know, you have something called reality. You can play that for a while, you know. But this is one of the things that I always that Blizzard was always good at. And that is, yeah, they do things like that are a lot alike of other people, but they spend a lot of time polishing, play balance, so that when you play, it's attractive and you just want to keep playing, which is probably what your experience with Warcraft was. Because Warcraft, it was like any other RTS, really. I mean, it wasn't anything drastically different about it, right? But it was so polished, and so, you know, with the interface and all that stuff, that it just made you want to come back to playing it.
I'll give you Warcraft 3 was pretty well designed, but I was super into City of Heroes when WoW came out, and I held a major resentment against it because, quite frankly, it was an IP that I was not any longer particularly involved in. I had my fill of, the medieval fantasy genre at the time. I mean, this was 2004. I had kind of exhausted myself on it for a little while.
Well, you know what? You may want to save your comments, though, because moving into game news, guess what the topic is? And then you can fold it into that. So
hold on. Let me see. Now, it's a long known secret.
We're going to move to game news.
I don't read the notes beforehand so you can get my actual feedback.
So let's do the game news first, this particular game news, and then you can continue on your story about World of Warcraft and City of Heroes.
We'll wrap up my comment.
Yeah, yes.
Okay, NCSoft might allow players to resurrect the City of Heroes IP, and this comes to us from Massively. There is good news for City of Heroes fans to celebrate now, even if it's not a finished thing yet. Nate Downs, president of Missing Worlds Media, has posted about a project wholly unrelated to City of Titans and has entirely tied into it, the quest to resurrect the City of Heroes IP. He explains a story that began in September of last year, starting with a few contacts within NCSoft who led to the ultimate goal of resurrecting the last version of the game as well as licensing out the IP to its spiritual successors. The proposal currently on the table before NCSoft would allow the game's spiritual successor to drop the spiritual portion of their title, enable a restoration of the game's servers for the last update, albeit with no saved character data, and create the potential for a transition server between the original game and its successors. While it's far from a done deal, it's the best news that the former residents of Paragon City have heard since the lights went dark. There might be brightness on the horizon.
So basically what they're saying is that the City of Heroes, they'll resurrect it as a lead into the other MMO. So I'm guessing that you could play your characters in this City of Heroes and have the option of having them move on to the next MMO, or you could just stay in City of Heroes and play City of Heroes. So
so you could just play City of Heroes? Like,
as part of that game.
I don't understand.
No, what they're saying is that, okay, this will be a transition server in which people who are used to City of Heroes, and this is what I'm getting from this, can make their City of Heroes characters and play City of Heroes, right? But MMO is sort of like the next chapter, right? And when they get sick of City of Heroes, they can transfer their characters, you know, move on to the next story. So it's like a transition.
Yeah, but it says that there's no player data. So, like, if I haven't played in, like, 3 years...
Yeah, you'd have to recreate your character and level them up
from scratch,
But, you know what? I find that odd because I find it hard to believe that the player data is completely gone. I'm pretty sure it's somewhere out there.
Yeah, but it costs money to get it back is the problem.
So, we're going back to your story about World of Warcraft and City of Heroes.
So, I was super into City of Heroes when World of Warcraft came out. I've been playing them for like a year at that point, like obsessively. Like, we're talking 4 or 5 in the morning. And there was nothing new about World of Warcraft except that it was tied to a different IP. I just continued playing the game that I had a level 30 character in and had invested so much time in. And it was like, the streets of Paragon City were fucking deserted after that thing launched. It was really annoying. Like supergroup after supergroup fell apart. I lost friends and never heard from them again. Dante Red Arrow, I'm talking to you. And it was just really sad. Like, the game had grown so quickly and expanded so much to accommodate for all these players that after WoW launched, it took too long to get from one side of the city to the other because it was just so deserted. And like we were talking about in our WoW recap, like, different instances of dungeons, that was not a new thing. That was going on in City of Heroes.
Yeah, I mean, they did some tweaks.
Like, it offered nothing new.
To you.
It just happened to, at all. Like, to any MMO, it offered nothing new. It just happened to be tied in with a different time period, with a different IP setting.
Well, it did do things that were new at the time.
No, it didn't. Tell me what it did that was new.
Okay. For one thing, I just explained the death mechanic, right? And they made it really painless.
So it was less harsh.
Yeah.
So it was less harsh. So there was really no penalty for failure. So it was a game for wusses. Here's an idea. How about you just don't
one
die?
One thing that World of Warcraft had that City of Heroes did not have and would not have until City of Villains came out was another faction, you know, that you could do PvP battles with. And that was one of the big things. And one of the annoying things about World of Warcraft was in every city you'd have – I would imagine these were like 10-year-old, 12-year-old kids who kept on throwing duel notices at each other. And you see these – these flags popping up and all that stuff. And one of the weird things is sometimes you'd have a level 50 character fighting a level 3 character. I don't know what for. Maybe people just wanted to see him get his butt whooped or something like that.
Yeah, but none of those are mechanical differences. Those are all just narrative wrappers.
That's the other thing. It was very heavy in narrative. And one of the things I did not like about City of Heroes was, I don't know, there was something off about the quest giving, you know. That I mean, the best part of City of Heroes, of course, was making your costume, you know.
And it's, oh, undeniably,
you know. And the thing is that, remember, you had to wait like 2 or 3 months before they actually released capes. For the first like 2 or 3 months, there were no capes. People were waiting for capes,
right? And then they did it.
Yeah, I just remember that from City of Heroes, just waiting for capes to come out. Anyway,
well, if your entire notion of your superhero is wrapped up in whether or not you can get a cape for a month,
no, I mean it wasn't that it was wrapped up around that. It was just like, you know, and the thing is,
okay,
that,
so it was a hard thing to do at the time.
My costume didn't require a cape, so you know, I had him have a cape, and I said, you know, he doesn't look quite as good with a cape. He looks better because he had a black jumpsuit with shiny purple lines. You know those, and you may know the pattern. I think it was the sort of like the cross-webbed lines. You know, they weren't like cobwebs, but they were like diamond cross-webs. You know, and
you're only further emphasizing my point, though. There were no mechanic or feature differences from one title to another. So I just stuck with the game that I was already too addicted to.
Anyway, so your entire thing right now is that you'd be more interested if they actually saved your character data, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I put like a good 3-4 years into my superhero.
I did return to City of Heroes a few times.
And then his villain brother. I mean,
see, the thing with me was that I was a reviewer, right? And I had to, you know, I came in and came out a lot. So it was like, I played City of Heroes for like 7 months or 8 months. Then I stopped, and then I played World of Warcraft. Then I stopped that, and I started playing City of Heroes again when City of Villains came out. And then I stopped. You know, I just had to keep up with what was going on, right? Which was nice because, you know, when I re-entered City of Heroes after being away that long, I found badges waiting for me as a thank you for coming back, you know? So, by the way, those were cool, by the way, getting badges. You remember getting badges?
Yeah, there were all sorts of different kinds of badges. My favorite ones were the historical point of importance badges.
Oh, yeah. And some of them I found, like, I did not know until I did it that I was on the top of that thing, the ball that was in front of that thing. And
right.
you got a badge for coming over here, this exploration part.
So for anyone who hasn't played it, like the opening game zone has this giant statue of Atlas carrying the world on his back, and it's got to be in game terms like at least 15 stories tall. I mean, this thing is massive.
Yeah.
And if you happen to get yourself to the top of this statue, you got a badge for exploring a really out of the way place. It didn't hurt that you needed to wait until like level 15 in order to get a flying ability or a super
or hovering
jump or whatever.
Or leaping.
Right.
You know what I heard from people was that leaping was the fastest way to traverse levels.
Yeah.
And I'd have to admit, because, you know, I preferred to fly even though it was slow, you know.
The flying was really slow because it had to render everything, because you could see
that,
further. So
it
had to render things further out in the distance.
It was a play balance issue too, you know. I know characters preferred the super speed thing, which they just ran. But the problem is, if you're running through, what was the name of that place where the earthquake was? And it has an earthquake name.
Fault line,
yeah. It was really tricky if you're using super speed through fault line, because you'd accidentally jump into, fall into one of those cracks
I hated the zones that were like a park, and if you tried to fly over to your destination,
oh, that's
and then,
the one with those
flying,
cultists.
You would stand
cultists.
On top of the trees. It's like, come on. Now I have to find a way down from the tree canopy.
Oh, that, yeah. Because it was a maze inside the forest.
Right, and there was no maps. And I was like, why am I going to want... I hated that.
Yeah, no one liked fighting those tree cultists.
Like, I would automatically just abandon any quest that took me there.
Yeah. So, anyway. So, yeah, I mean... I also
was a
beta tester for Champions Online, which was done by the same guys who did City of Heroes. But Champions Online didn't have the same magic for whatever reason. Even though it had even better costume options and all that, it didn't have... I mean, when I first played City of Heroes, it felt magical, right? When you first play an MMO that you know... What's it called? When you first... Day one, no matter how... You can tell... if it's good or not. I mean, I had the same magical feeling when I did City of Heroes, World of Warcraft, Dark Age of Camelot, right? They felt magical, right? Other MMOs did not feel magical, and Champions Online did not feel magical, even though it was done by the same people who were doing City of Heroes.
I got nothing.
Well, you never played Champions Online, right?
No, I also have no idea how to quantify your magical
terminology. Well, when you first entered City of Heroes... Didn't it feel a little special to you?
Yes, it felt unique.
Well, okay, if you want to call it unique, that's good enough quantifier. Because, you know, it wasn't unique to me. It was just that I could feel something about it. It had that je ne sais quoi. Anyway, we're going to move on to the next item. Sega accuses Gearbox founder of doing whatever the f*** he likes. And this comes to us from Ars Technica. And this is also a continuation of a story that's been going on for the past few weeks because it's been wrapping up. The class action suit lawsuit pitting gamers against the producers of the critical stinker Aliens Colonial Marines nearly reached a conclusion last month when game producer Sega of America tentatively agreed to a $1.25 million settlement. However, on Wednesday, over a month after game developer Gearbox filed a motion distancing itself away from any financial obligation, namely having avoid paying $750,000, $750,000, to bring the settlement's grand total of $2 million. Sega responded with its own motion, insisting that Gearbox was just as responsible for any payout responsibility. Ours contained obtained a copy of this motion filed by Sega's lawyers in the Northern District of California court. It included copies of emails, contracts, and correspondence that reinforced a particularly sticking point in the case, that Gearbox was just as responsible for the game's promotional efforts, which were tagged as misleading in the class action suit, as Sega was. Many of the dozen-plus letters hinged on Gearbox pushing forward with screens, videos, and other details that hadn't been cleared or approved for reveal by Sega, either on Gearbox's official website or at community events. Sega's attitude about this had deteriorated by October 2012 when Sega PR rep blaming persistent panel leaking of game details on Randy Pitchford, who was the Gearbox director, doing whatever the f*** he likes. One email titled Gearbox is Announcing Things detailed a number of game facts and a video preview footage revealed in June 2011 that hadn't been approved by Sega. In another, a Sega PR representative called out Pitchford for talking a lot beyond what's there at an event. And yet another email, Pitchford was quoted as saying, Aliens Colonial Marines will curb stomp Dead Space. Obviously a prediction that didn't really come true. Perhaps more damning than anything else was the reveal of an email describing the game's pre-release demos, the very ones that the case hinges on, and since the demos look significantly better than the final retail game. Quote, the E3 demo is indeed the bar we should use to determine where the game will be, Sega staffer Matthew Powers wrote in July 2011. That is Gearbox's plan and what they believe in. Sega's motion also alleged that when Gearbox claimed it hadn't participated in working out settlement terms, the developer's statement was quote-unquote not correct, clarifying exact times and details of a negotiating meeting that Gearbox attended. So yeah, there is a lot of stuff here, especially when you have emails with Sega marketing people complaining that Gearbox is just releasing stuff without their say-so, you know? Go ahead, Paul.
I think this comes to a question of who has ultimate responsibility, the developer or the publisher.
Well, here's the thing, that the publisher was complaining that the developer was releasing info, you know, and stuff that they hadn't cleared, and also promising things that they eventually were not able to back up, you know? I mean, if Gearbox was the one who was showing this E3 demo when there was already a final release, that's kind of damning. I mean, now, I have dealt with Randy Pitchford before, and sorry to say, he does seem like the sort of person who would do things without people giving him permission to. You know?
Be that as it may, it calls into question the relationship between any publisher and their developer. Like, frankly, what recourse does a publisher have if a developer, you know, a third-party developer isn't, you know, fulfilling their end of an obligation? Now, namely, to, you know, work with them on their marketing efforts.
You know, the thing is that one little twist here is that Gearbox itself is a publisher because they publish their own stuff a lot.
But if they're not acting as publisher,
no, they're not acting
title,
as publisher for this. They're under,
then it doesn't really matter that they publish other things.
Yeah.
Other than this, other than to say that they should know better.
It's just so bizarre. I've never heard of this sort of stuff happening. I mean, there's obviously a lot of ego on Gearbox's part. I mean, saying, "Oh, you know what? Our game is gonna be much better than Dead Space." You know.
Okay, so that's a subjective claim, though.
I know, but the thing is that I don't. You know, I find it a little bit distasteful when developers start putting down other developers. You know, say, "Oh, our game is gonna kick your game's ass."
Yeah, that's kind of a no-no. I mean,
especially, you know, with video gaming, you know, games coexist, you know. I mean, I can buy Dead Space and I can buy Aliens Colonial Marines, you know. It's not like...
Not even that. It's just, you know, it's bad form to really speak ill of other people's products.
Or at least say that we're going to be better than you, what you put out, you know. It's not even putting it down. It's just like, we're going to do this better, you know.
Right. I mean, there's...
By inference that they didn't do their product as good as they were going to do it, you know.
It's a fine line to walk. Like, there's always, you know, it can always be taken as a compliment of we're going to try to emulate X title or, you know, be a worthy competitor for X title, or perhaps even improve on Y feature in X title. But to just kind of make a blanket statement of we're just going to be better than them, I mean, that's kind of childish.
Well, you know, it also depends on what kind of relationship they have with Visceral, who did Dead Space. I mean, if they're sort of like, you know, beer buddies, you know, in which, you know, the developers just hang out and just what's it called, then that's fine. You know, it's like issuing a challenge.
If the two companies are like dude bros being like, "Hey, bro, I'm going to kick your ass in Halo." "No, bro, I'm going to kick your ass in Halo."
It's fine. I mean, then it's just
who's laughing at whose corpse.
And it's fine. It's just like, you know, just a playful challenge. But it doesn't come off that way. And still, you know, there's no reason to even say it anyway. You know, what you could say is that we're going to try and see if we can reach the heights of Dead Space and exceed them, you know, by placing Dead Space on a pedestal and saying, you know, we're really trying to get better than them because they made they pushed the standard so high. Then, you know, then it's actually a compliment, you know. Because you did something so great, we want to try and do better. You know, but other than that, you know, it just sounds off. But at least the people who bought Aliens Colonial Marines will get $10 in the mail or $5 in the mail for the game that they had. So it just doesn't bode well for a future relationship with Gearbox and any publisher because, you know, it's a small industry, you know. I mean, think Activision's going to look at them – well, not Activision. Yeah, Activision, say, because they're going to look at them and say, well, you know, they didn't exactly have the best relationship with Sega. Do we want to have that kind of pain? That sort of thing.
Yes.
So, anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Paul. Free full version.
Free full version Xbox One game trials coming for gold members. And this comes to us from Major Nelson. Microsoft has announced that it will start full game demos over weekends. And this weekend will feature Forza Motorsport 5 for free for Xbox Live gold members, beginning at 12:01 Thursday and September 4th through midnight on Sunday, September 7th, Pacific times, respectively. The Forza Motorsport 5 weekend will allow you to check the full Forza experience with special in-game challenges, online play, and collect achievement and gamer score. After the weekend, you'll have the option to purchase the game online from the Xbox Game Store or visit your favorite retailer and continue playing from where you left off. Additionally, Turn 10 has some special events planned for this weekend. For more details, check over to the Xbox Wire.
You know, this is there's a little bit of a trend here, you know, that remember we were talking about like 2 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago about EA Access, right, and how they were going to allow you to play the full version of a game for 5 days before it was actually released, and then if you wanted to, you could buy the game. That's basically what's happening here. And, you know, this is stuff that people who have Steam are very used to. You know, Steam would allow you to play a game, the full version of a game for free over a weekend. And if you like it, you could buy it, you know, usually with a discount.
Right.
So it's, you know, it's an interesting direction that's going on with consoles. And you know what? It's pretty good. You know, I mean, with new technology, when the consoles are able to match some of the technology of the PC, then you have deals like this. I'm wondering when there's going to be a Humble Bundle for either the Xbox One or the PS4. That's what I'm waiting for.
Okay.
So, your opinion?
It's an interesting marketing ploy. I mean, but like having a demo is really nothing new.
Yeah, but this is a full game.
We've been getting them since the early 90s.
Yeah, this is not a demo though. This is actually a full game trial.
Right. It's like saying to everyone that they could go to their local Blockbuster and have a free rental weekend. I mean, it's.
But you know what? This ties back to the City of Heroes thing because, you know, with this, everything that you do, you know, all the stats that you pile up and all the things that you do are waiting for you when you get the full version, right?
Yeah, that's always better.
You know, I mean, that's what you want with City of Heroes. You know, if I'm coming back, I want my character the way he was or she was.
Oh, I can.
Who was your main character behind that? In City of Heroes?
What was that?
What was your main character in City of Heroes?
He was a mutant energy blaster.
Okay. Yeah, mine was a controller, and I think he was a dark energy controller, if I remember correctly, because he could manipulate and also heal, if I remember correctly.
Well, you could always pick up a healing class as a secondary skill set, regardless of your primary.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying that's what he was, though. He did dark energy and healing. And his entire thing was, having electricity, you know, going all over his costume and all that. Anyways, now this item is especially tailored for you. I'm pretty sure you'll have a lot to say about it. Thousands of developers signed plea for tolerance in gaming community, and this comes to us from Ars Technica. Amid weeks of heated rhetoric and misogyny-charged threats and attacks to the gaming world, many members of the gaming industry have publicly signed on to a petition asking for tolerance and acceptance in the larger community. Spaces of Play's Andrea Secker wrote in an open letter on Medium, quote, "We believe that anyone, everyone, no matter what gender, sexual orientation, ethnicity, religion, or disability, has the right to play games, criticize games, and make games without getting harassed or threatened. It is the diversity of our community that allows gamers to flourish." It's the diversity of our community that allows games to flourish. If you see threats of violence or harm in comments on Steam, YouTube, Twitch, Twitter, Facebook, or Reddit, please take a minute to report them on the respective sites. If you see hateful and harassing speech, take a public stand against it and make the gaming community a more enjoyable space to be in. Zetcher has asked the gaming community members to write in with their names and organizations to be counted as supporters, and as of this writing, over 2,100 have done so. While the signatories so far include a large number of independent developers and students, Zetcher letter also has drawn public support from developers at major studios like BioWare, Crystal Dynamics, Double Fine, Epic Games, DICE, Electronic Arts, Harmonix, Infinity Ward, Insomniac Games, Microsoft, Riot Games, Rockstar North, Sony Computer Entertainment, Telltale, Ubisoft, Oculus VR, ZeniMax, and more. A few journalists have also signed on from such outlets as Eurogamer, Destructoid, IGN, and Polygon. This shouldn't be mistaken as official corporate support for this anti-harassment message from these organizations, but the sheer number and range of signatories from within the community is loud and a public statement against vitriolic element of the community that has grown louder in recent weeks. Now, before you comment, I will say that I did get this and I forwarded it on to Chris Avalon of Obsidian, and I'm pretty sure he signed on as well. I haven't asked him, but I'm it's a given that he probably signed on. So, Paul, this is something that you probably have a lot to talk about.
Well, my first thought is that I had no idea there was a letter going around to be signed up to. So I'm a little hurt.
I can always
send you
the link, Paul.
No, they're closed. I looked into it.
Oh, okay.
They're not accepting any more signatures.
Wow.
So, yeah, that kind of hurts. I feel left out from the inclusiveness letter.
Well, you know, you could always express your support for it. I mean, you don't have to officially be.
I mean, I want my name included with everybody else, and I looked up a couple of other people that I know, and their names were not included either. I'd like to know where this name collecting thing happened, but that's just my personal pet peeve.
Well, I first learned of it on Twitter like a couple of days ago.
Oh, so if we're not big on Twitter, we don't get to.
No, I mean, I found out about it on Twitter. I'm pretty sure it was
other places. The list might be much longer, actually, than the 2,000 names collected. Moving on, though, the interesting thing to note here is that this is not just like the games community, and I noticed that you were unintentionally subbing out words when you were reading the copy, but it's the game making industry. It's people who are like, we don't care. Stop harassing each other. Like, just enjoy the games that we make. Please stop making it hard for other people to do so. So I found that really kind of uplifting.
I will say that I know of that people got hyperactive on the romances that you could have in Dragon Age, and the ones that they're being announced right now in Dragon Age Inquisition. And people get so hyperventilating about who can romance who, you know, and my thought is, you know, it doesn't really matter. Just play the game that you want to play. You know, if you don't want to have this character romance them, then fine. You don't have to. It's not a part of the story if you don't want it to be.
This is all optional content. And even if it was strictly a story about a particular kind of protagonist, whatever kind of protagonist that might be, like an Israeli, a Hindu, a gay, you know, a black lesbian, like who, like all of that would be on the package. So like, just look at the box before you buy the damn thing.
I mean,
anyway, but like that aside, like how sad is it that in 2014, like this is the conversation that we're having?
Well,
like really?
Yeah, it's what's going on with Michael Sam is, you know, shows it's not just the gaming community. I mean, it's all over. But here's the thing I'm finding.
Please feel free to add that particular element to the conversation for any of our listeners who might be unaware.
Well, Michael Sam was the first open. He came out of the closet before he was drafted. Right, he was the SEC's co-defensive player of the year. You know, and
normally a football thing.
He would have
a football thing.
Yeah. It's in the NFL, American football. And normally he would have been drafted around the third or fourth rounds, which is where people of his stature usually got drafted, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly all these scouts saying, well, he's a one-dimensional this and all that, you know, and he dropped down to the seventh round. He was drafted, and then the big stink was made because he kissed his boyfriend, which was basically a light peck on the lips. It wasn't like they were sucking face, you know. It was just sort of like a congratulatory peck on the lips, you know, for being happy.
So they weren't going to town.
No, one of them wasn't going on his knees or anything. Let's just say that. So,
well, I mean, there's a difference between an inappropriate sucking of face and.
But it was nothing you won't see from someone who's really, really happy, you know.
Okay, so it was just a normal, Disney-esque level of kiss.
And then, you know, the Rams drafted him, and he really excelled in the preseason.
Mm-hmm.
And the head coach said, you know, he could play in this league. And then he was cut. And then mysteriously, no one would hire him, even for the practice squads. Now, the Cowboys eventually signed him to a practice squad because they were desperate.
Okay.
You know, but, you know, there's a big stink like, well, no one wanted him, so he must not have been good enough, which is really silly, you know. That's not how it works, you know.
But everybody wanted him.
To get a fair chance. He's not getting a fair chance. That's the big deal.
Time.
Well, the thing is, it's not that he wasn't drafted at this spot or that spot. You know, it's just that it's kind of clear that he's not getting a fair chance. Anyway, moving this just a little bit away from that and where my main point was going to be is that I find that usually when a group is getting their civil rights, that's when the opposition is greatest. You know, like African-American civil rights in the 60s and the 50s. You know, that was when the most violence and the most hatred came out because they were getting their civil rights, right?
Right. Whenever one challenges the status quo, there will always be those whom the status quo benefits who speak up against it.
Yeah, but it's just that, you know, right now, the reason why there's so much pushback is because there's so much pushing forward.
And it just seems that it's like the last vestiges of where people have their self-identities wrapped up and how macho they could be, for example, like the NFL or hardcore, you know, shoot 'em up video game communities, are the ones who seem to be getting really defensive at how dare other people come into their space.
Well, it's not even coming into their space. It's just being visible.
I think that what the letter is trying to say is it's not just your space. It's everybody's space. It's like saying that books can only be about one thing.
I'm just surprised they would cap the signatures, though. That's news to me. You know, I
tried signing and they said that they were not accepting additional signatures.
Which makes me wonder why. Why don't you? I mean, whenever you do a petition, doesn't that? And of course, you know, you could always, you know, I mean, the thing is that, you know, you don't really need a piece of paper or a list of 2,100 people to make your feelings known. I mean,
the point is, I've been saying this for years, as have a number of other developers.
Well, you know what? Isn't it good that other people are saying it now?
Really great. It would be really great if, like, the International Game Developers Association, who has a special interest group specifically devoted to diversity in the gaming workplace and on, you know, gaming communities, like made this kind of a statement.
I will say this, though. You know where gamers, where a lot of hardcore gamers are, especially in the PC gaming community, are in Russia. And, you know, and the thing is that this, you know, this is sort of like getting around all of the stuff that's going on there and, you know, making it, you know, I'm pretty sure a lot of these Russian gamers don't appreciate what BioWare does, you know, with their romances and all that stuff, you know, so it's exposure, you know, and the thing is that Harvey Fierstein said he never had a problem with Nelly characters, you know, characters who are overly Nelly, because he said that, you know, I'd rather have that than nothing. You know,
Because at least that's a representation of some part of the community. They're like, yes, there might be, you know, the Jack McFarlane characters who can be offensive, but we know people like that. They wouldn't be a character type if they didn't exist in the real world somewhere. That having been said, you know, on a tangential note, a lot of, you know, I forget what her name was, but the games critic lady who had, you know, she earlier this week posted a follow-up in her series on kind of like the usage of female NPCs as props on which to be violent in order to further the main plot of the video game. So it was talking about, you know, how, you know, female characters are just there to be sexualized or to have horrible amounts of violence reaped upon them, like as if they were a lamp or a chair or a puppy to be kicked. She apparently received death threats in the days that followed posting that. And
Anita Sarkeesian.
Thank you. I knew you were looking it up if I would just talk long
or
enough.
Zoe Quinn.
I think it was Anita.
Anita Sarkeesian.
Yeah.
That was her. On Thursday, it was widely reported that in North America, she had to flee her home thanks to rape and death threats from angry gamers targeting her and her family. What she had done was release a few, you know, YouTube videos.
Right. And so, you know, I'd seen a number of different messages, you know, supporting her and speaking out against her. I think that there is a very cognizant movement in the games industry and in the games reporting industry, because they're kind of two separate things, to highlight some of the issues and to try to effect positive change. But I don't think that every single one of them is successful. Like going back to Anita, for example, and I applaud her viewpoints. But she doesn't seem in her videos to offer any original, like, okay, so how do we fix this kind of a mentality? She just kind of goes off screaming about how dire everything is. Not to say that it isn't, because...
But she's offering... I mean, what's it called? She's not offering any solutions.
Right. And I definitely think that, you know, that the letter in question, which is how we got on this topic, is kind of doing maybe one step more than that, because it's saying, look,
stop it. Stop it. Just cut it out. Stop it. That's all.
Like, just stop being a tantrum-throwing 12-year-old. Realize that not everybody is the same as you. Otherwise, you're going to be into a rude awakening when you enter the workforce.
You know, the thing is that video gaming is basically still in its infancy for the most part, you know?
It's
an art form that's been around since the early 70s for the most part.
I would say it's in its late childhood. We've moved on from infancy to about like the range of an 8-year-old.
Okay, well, that's semantics. I'm just saying it's still really early. And the thing is, we don't have the maturity, not only within the fan base, we don't have the maturity in the development space or the journalism space. I mean, the 2100 singers, that's fine. But we still have people releasing stuff like Duke Nukem Forever. Oh, look, I just included Randy Pitchford again, you know, which just, you know. Right, see, the thing about the original Duke Nukem 3D was that it was a parody, you know, of the action movies of the 90s, right?
But that's part of the charm.
But Duke Nukem Forever didn't have that parody. It was just misogynistic, period. There was nothing.
But that's part of the charm of the medium, though, that you can express these horribly social, incongruous ideas in a safe space. I mean, it's going right back to how the Magic Circle makes Grand Theft Auto okay. And even a healthy outlet for hostile feelings. But that's not saying that the art form needs to be limited to that any more than...
I'm just saying it has to grow up.
Yeah, you know? The thing about Duke Nukem Forever,
that was not winking. That was not winking, right? It wasn't, it was just stupid testosterone flourished garbage.
But there's nothing wrong with testosterone.
Well, here's the thing. There was supposed to be a character in Duke Nukem Forever, which would be a female version of Duke, who would put him in his place, and they removed that character.
Not being able to speak to that specific point, getting back to something that you said earlier,
okay.
I think that what I would really like to see is the viewpoint of like a 70-year-old gamer who has been playing games since he was 10.
Not that old
10.
Yet, Paul. Come on.
No, but I'm saying someone who happens to, you know, be reaching a venerable age, who has been playing games his whole life. And I think that we as a game making and a game reviewing and game journalism industries suffer from the fact that we don't have those viewpoints because there is simply no historical person for whom those
converge. It's narrative gaming. We haven't had narrative gaming until like the mid 80s, because before that it was just cartoons with bleep bloop blop, you know.
I don't think those words mean what you think they mean.
Narrative gaming as in telling a story, an actual story, not that Pauline was kidnapped by Donkey Kong.
All games tell a story.
I mean an actual narrative story.
Yes.
As in scripted.
Chess, thousands of years old.
That is not dramatic narrative. Come on, Paul.
Yes, it is.
It's not dramatic.
You've never seen a really good game of chess.
Anyway.
But I'm just saying, like, you're right. The medium is not old enough to have that really venerable viewpoint. You know, our venerable people right now are in their 40s.
Thank you.
You know, but like that's what counts as like the most mature point of view.
Right.
Hopefully they have like two or three kids.
So you know what?
They're not like they're not like, we don't have a grandparent's opinion.
Right. We have beat this to death. So you know what? We're going to shift this over to the listener. And
yeah, it's like, I can't believe we're having this conversation in 2014. Listener, like, this is what my master's thesis was about 5 years ago.
You know, we need to hear new listeners, or at least old listeners never written, write and let us know what they think of this topic in particular, you know, aside from, absolutely.
Because I could kind of guess what some of our regular listeners, like Arthur the Fifth or, you know, or whomever might have to say on it. I want to hear as many viewpoints on this topic as I can.
Oh, that's the problem here, is that I know Paul too well and Paul knows me too well. So we basically know what each other's going to say on the topic. So it's sort of like, yeah, you know, it's bouncing. It's like a bouncing ball. But we already know how the ball bounces. We need to have some fresh impressions, you know. So
if you'd like to join the podcast, we could always use a third voice.
Yeah. Anyways, we're gonna move on to the next item. Take it away, Paul.
Dev on PS4. This was not here a second ago. Dev on PS4 is 8 gig RAM. It didn't really change that much for us, and this comes from Gaming Bolt. Sony has received a lot of praise for including 8 gigs of RAM in its latest console, the PlayStation 4, including the fast GDDR5 RAM memory has enabled the console to have much faster access paths between CPU and GPU, and the results are much better multi-platform games on the PS4. However, not all developers were overwhelmed by Sony's move to include faster RAM. It didn't really change that much for us, says Kerbal Studios' Adrian Adrian Tingstad Hudsby, line break up there, said to Gaming Bolt, we've really not been close to those restrictions on PC either. So for us, porting the game to PS4 was more about making our systems work with the PS4 architecture. It's important to note that Adrian is not criticizing Sony's move to include 8 gig RAM, but is simply stating that from his perspective as a developer, Kilbright Studios are currently working on porting Among the Sleep, a first-person survival horror adventure. He also revealed that they are targeting 1080p and 60 FPS. That's the target, but the PS4 version is still in development, so it's not definite.
Yeah, Among the Sleep is a very strange survival horror game in which you play a toddler. Play a 3-year-old, so everything's from your perspective crawling around on the floor.
yeah,
it's actually kind of scary in a lot of.
Yeah, about time. Then maybe approve.
And I actually backed it on Kickstarter. So you're the developer. Let's go from this perspective on memory and what it does for you.
Okay, so there's like a basic minimum requirements to, you know, to the platform. And I think that mostly this comment can be boiled down to we made this game for PC. It's kind of nice that the PS4 decided to catch up with PCs and stay competitive, which, hey, is great. Me personally, I still can't get over games that have a load time.
You know, I just think, you know, it's not the art. It'll almost never be the hardware that makes people buy a console. To me, it's still going to be two things: price and games, and that's it. You know,
and oftentimes good games will justify a price.
Yeah, you know, and a lot of good games don't need super graphics anyway.
We had fantastic games back in the day, and they didn't need all this bullshit that we got now.
Yeah, well, I'm talking about games that were made today, like Minecraft. You know, Minecraft doesn't require, you know, high-res textures.
That's part of why I'm such a fan of the Lego series.
Mm.
I mean, because it's all about, like, where can you hide things?
I haven't...
Okay. Lego has very simple textures. That allows them to build bigger places.
Yeah. I haven't played anything beyond Lego Batman. You know, I've been you know, I haven't played a Lego since that one, and I think that's like 2006, maybe.
But the basic formula has not changed. No, they're able to. Oh, they're able to
talk now. I mean, that's the main difference is now the characters actually talk.
Yeah, but the point is that they're able to devote the resources from all of these high definition textures and fancy graphics to larger levels and more places to explore, which to that audience is more important. And you know, that's kind of one of the things that has been plaguing the Zelda series ever since the original. You know, Zelda was a huge hit when it first came out because it had this massive world to explore in relative terms, and you could go screen to screen without there being a problem, and you really only had to load something new when you went from the overworld into a specific dungeon. That has kind of broken up as, you know, Zelda as a franchise spends more time on graphics, for example. Now you have like these really aggravating load times between like the Zora Falls and the main Hyrule Field and then to Lon Lon Ranch. Like that breaks up the feeling that made the franchise popular.
Part of it is that it's actually no longer doing a cartridge in which you're actually just adding another ROM to your console. You know, that adds to the speed.
The point here being is that any step that we can get to make the whole game experience overall better is going to be met with, you know, good praise. But if you're just trying to catch up to the point that another piece of hardware is, namely a PC, you're not going to get fireworks, maybe. You kind of got to be better than your competition.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Okay, so we're going to move to listener feedback. And we actually have three letters this month.
Woohoo, three letters!
And two of them are people who've written in before, but they've come back after an absence. From Arthur V. Did someone say yoga? I have returned from my deep educational derangement, securing my graduation and unemployment. Yeah, that's the bitch. Aww, you know? You graduate and then you say, wait, I don't have a job.
Shit happens.
Now that I'm a
welcome to game making. I'm sorry, you're in a completely unrelated field.
Maybe. Now that I am a professional vagabond with a smexy new Xbox One, I will dedicate some more time to gaming and ultimately this podcast. Oh, don't go, Paul. Here's some love. Manly, comrade-like, non-platonic love. Wait,
non-platonic.
Non-platonic. Arthur, I don't know you know what you're saying right now.
I don't think that word means what you think it means.
At Non-Tangible Gaming, I purchased the Xbox One Titanfall bundle and had to endure a 4-hour download of the game. I fully understand why console gaming is still disc-based. On the other hand, my Steam library has 170 titles, which I can download at high speed at a moment's notice. Until my Xbox can pull that kind of performance at Steam-like prices, I don't think I will download that many console games. I have loads of digital PS3 titles for that very reason. At gaming conventions, never been to one purely dedicated to a single game. Never been really that dedicated to just one game. Here in the UK, it's rare to find a gaming convention at all. Even the major events tend to skip out a year or two. That's not true. I'm pretty sure you know the Eurogamer
convention. Well, he's giving his experience, so don't tell him it's not true.
Well, I'm just saying, you know what? There's a Eurogamer convention.
He might be talking about a national level.
Maybe the Eurogamer is only for media. You know, I mean, Gamescom, which is in Germany, does the
right. But he might also be talking about on a national level.
Yeah,
like he might not want to go to Germany to go to a video games conference. Having never lived in Europe, I have no idea how annoying that could be.
I know there are some dedicated communities in London, but it's easier to buy weaponized uranium than to find one. However, if I could ever go to one, it'll probably be about Elder Scrolls or Halo. That, you know, Microsoft really has to do a Halo convention. I mean,
no, that's okay.
It has it has a ton of fans. Here we go. Look, P.S. City of Heroes was made in the dark days of gaming when homophobia was supreme and untraditional sexual orientation was frowned upon. Allowing a city full of adolescent boys running around in colored briefs would be marketing suicide. It's quite amusing. Since then, homosexuality went mainstream and even the became a marketing selling point for some games. Hey, Paul, you went mainstream. It's only a matter.
I was mainstream before it was cool.
It's only a matter of time before you can create a It's only a matter of time before you can create a transgender fifth generation Foxkin character in an RPG. Is he talking about a transgender furry?
I have no idea.
Foxkin.
That's what it sounds like.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next one, but you know, he's
anyway, he wants you to... I'm fairly certain we might already have a couple of transgender characters out there in games. I'd have to go look it up, but yeah, but no, screw, you know what? I can't even. I'm so annoyed at the whole briefs thing still.
What was wrong?
Because the world did not end when they let it into the game a few months later.
Oh.
I don't understand.
Okay. Anyways, next one is for you.
From Alpha Shard. Another good episode, guys, and I'm glad you enjoyed the Princess Bride reference.
You know, he did that.
I don't think that reference means what you think it means.
Actually, it's exactly what it actually means. And this
at Console Digital Gaming, I'm all for this as I really do enjoy not having to worry about where discs are. I have quite a few in digital format on my PS3. At Sims 4, I agree with Jonah. You have no taste, Alpha Sharp. It's one of the things to rewrite the mechanic on how something works in a game, like with Civ 5 Espionage and Rebellion being vastly different.
Rebellion,
how it
religion,
in
come on.
Game. to just stripping out features that you know will be repackaged into an expansion pack, not looking much different or better for its delay. All the things that have been left out had us feel like we were going back to Sims 1.
Now, just before you move on, The Sims 4 is getting terrible reviews. For one thing, it is as stripped down as people were afraid it was, and also it's buggy. So, this is obviously...
I've made the personal choice not to engage in Sims 4 until towards the end of the product's lifespan when I can get the expansion packs for like 25% of their retail.
But this is sort of the thing that's screaming to me that maybe it should have been released in 2015. Like, they should have taken another year to make it, you know, and add all the stuff that people have come to expect. Because there's just so much you can strip out before people say, what's the point? Let me put it this way. You can't get a washing machine, you know, in the game.
Wait, isn't part of the game all about, like, balancing your chores?
Yeah.
Do you mean a washing machine or a dishwasher?
A dishwasher.
Oh.
Or a washing machine.
Stupid.
It's just, like I said, you know,
Wait, have they removed the need to clean things and made this an idealized universe?
You have to wash dishes by hand.
Wah, wah.
But the thing is that, you know, they stripped out so much, and it's buggy to boot, that, like I said, that just tells me, you know what? You didn't have to release it in 2014. People weren't, you know, I don't know what the rush was. I mean, people weren't saying, we need this game right now. I think people were saying, yes,
they were still, you know, Sims 3 was still doing pretty well.
People were saying, we want one that's good. You know, time.
Having not played it, I only saw a demo at E3. I didn't get a chance to play it, but didn't look that spectacular.
I mean, they will say, before you move, people have said that the interactions between characters is a lot better. But that's about it.
Well, maybe that's what they were focusing on. But yeah, I mean, if you're saying you're not hearing good things, then I'm less excited to part with $70.
Yeah. Okay, moving on.
At YouTube Offline, hey, if they want to give me free music, who am I to complain? At Question of the Week, I almost went to a Minecon in Orlando since that's near where I live. However, it's really hard to get tickets. They sold them in groupings of 3,000 and they all went in seconds. Freaking jackals.
Wow. So,
yeah. Hey, Alpha Shard, I love Disney World. Next time I want to go there, can I crash at your place for free? Just saying.
Well, didn't say he lives in Orlando. He said there was a Minecon in Orlando. So maybe you know what he could have been doing?
But Orlando is near where he lives, apparently.
Well, I mean, they could have
take me to Disney World.
He could have been planning a trip for Orlando and Disney World, see, and have Minecon as a part of it. So he gets to go to Disney World and go to a Minecon.
I'm just saying, I need to go to Diagon Alley. That's all I'm saying.
You have to go where?
Somebody get me to Diagon Alley.
I
might start a Kickstarter.
Is that a new feature at?
That is an expansion built to Universal Studios Florida.
Oh, okay. And finally, a very brief mail from Oliver Lance. Hey, after two years, okay, yeah. So he's saying he's come back after 2 years. Downloading an episode here feels like a trip to memory lane. I'm not sure if you remember me. Oh, yes, we remember you. Yes, we remember you're very, very enthusiastic. That's what we're
crickets.
Well, Cricket. Of course, too. He is very enthusiastic.
I vaguely remember the name. I don't remember the
he's a little
personality.
Kid.
Oh, hi, Ollie.
So, yeah, I mean, he...
oh, wait, is this the kid from Brazil that, like, Facebook friended me? Oh, hi, Ollie.
I don't know if he's from Brazil.
If it's you, you know who you are.
But yeah, it's not a trip to memory lane for us because we were here the entire time. Anyway,
some of us have a lot more memories to go through than other people. I'm just saying.
So here's the question of the week, and Paul can't answer this because he already said that he never played it. What are your strongest memories of World of Warcraft that you have? And
how it devastated Paragon City. That's what I remember.
The
streets were empty. I mean, imagine like a Zelda game with no NPCs in it. Like, not even the old dude.
Oh, come on. Lady Liberty was still there. What are you talking about? And she was just there by herself, standing around. That's what
Right? Until they announced that it was closing. And then her freaking square was swamped.
You know, that's just one thing I remember about that game most of all, I think. Beside from Fault Line,
was Lady Liberty standing there in front of the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. She was, for anyone who didn't play, she was like the first NPC that you met, and she gave you your first mission, and she just stands there.
Yeah, basically,
like,
she's
to do that job for everybody who ever signs up in the game.
She's like a cross between Superman and Wonder Woman. That's what she was.
I couldn't say she was an interesting character because she was just a piece of furniture standing there to give you your first assignment.
So for me, the first strongest memory I have of World of Warcraft was actually being at E3. When they unveiled it for the first time, a playable form. It was in 2002. It was also my first E3. So, and that's how I got to be friends with some of the people on staff at World of Warcraft. So,
you didn't go to your first
what?
E3 until you were like 60?
Okay.
Get it? You see what I did there? It was funny.
Yeah. Well, see, if that were true, then I'd be a 70-year-old gamer, and I'm not. So... So I remember that and wanting to play desperately, but it was hands off. It was like a running demo. Pretty sure it was a vertical slice, but from the graphics and the style, I knew it was going to be a winner. And then the other thing is I was on there day one, and the one thing I remember was that there were so many people in the thing. It was hard in the hell just to kill those little things to start your first quest. You know, it said, kill these wolves, you know, and like wolves would die as soon as they spawned because there were so many people there. That's what I remember most about that. By the way, I do know what you feel like with City of Heroes, because I remember going to Dark Age of Camelot and long stretches of nothingness in places that used to be really, really popular. It was really sad, but, you know. I also remember coming back that I was the only person left in my guild. I was a one-person guild.
You know, I tried having a one-person supergroup for a time because then I would be, you know, the only one who would, like, be decorating the guild hall and, like, having some personal space.
Boring, isn't it?
And, like, nobody... Not that it's boring,
it's just lonely?
Not that it was lonely either, but it was like, dude, the in-game rent that they charged you was insane.
Oh, okay. Well, the problem with mine is
like, as a designer, they should have done, like, a rent per person.
Mm.
You know, this way you could have an individual layer as opposed to only having a supergroup layer.
Yeah. So the reason for this question of the week is that that gaming podcast still has sort of a World of Warcraft group in which everybody got together. And the most popular forum was people talking about World of Warcraft and, you know, just planning stuff out. So this is probably one way to get the older listeners to pipe in and talk about how they used to romp with Derek and Jennifer in the fields of Azeroth, you know, and do
stuff. See, now you guys are just going to have to tell me how awesome World of Warcraft is, because quite frankly, I just don't believe any of you.
You know,
prove me wrong. Prove me wrong.
No, you know what? I'll put it. It was the people. So it was not the MMO itself, and it's probably the same with City of Heroes for you. You know, it's the people that you hang out with, and you know, did stuff with, and you know, it just became ingrained into your brain, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. You can enjoy our feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast, the forums at GamingPodcast.net/forum, or send your comments to fans@GamingPodcast.net. You can also not check out our gaming news at GameStooge.com, which is going to vanish soon. So go to GamingPodcast.net or GameStooge.podbean.net or .com. Also, subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. So yeah, GameStooge is going to be another empty, barren place, just like City of Heroes became.
I don't understand why, like, if it's so important to you, you can't just, like, cut them a check for the update in space that they want.
It's a lot more than that than you think. It's the hard drives. It's the server space, not necessarily the website space.
But regardless, it's something that can easily be broken down into like a monthly amount.
I guess.
But it's, like, it's more that they just don't want to.
I don't know. But you know what? It's happening. So, you know, it's like the death of a loved one. You know, you just got to accept it and move on and save memories from it. So, anyways, this has been a long episode. But you know what? It was, we had a week off. You know, we're fresh from Labor Day.
Oh, I'm exhausted.
Cue the yawn from Paul.
I'm exhausted.
So everybody keep on telling how much you love Paul and how much you want him to stay.
Woohoo!
just like Arthur V with his non-platonic love.
I got one comment of non-platonic love. I feel so appreciated.
Well, you know, unfortunately he's in Europe and you're not, so.
All right, I got a pizza to eat.
So, okay, see you next week, everybody.
Bye, Bonds.